Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 9-year-old Lionel stood quietly next to the social worker as she shook hands with Mrs. Wilson. "I'll be in touch regularly to check on Lionel's progress," she said. "Don't hesitate to call if you need me." "Goodbye, Lionel." She patted him on the shoulder as she turned to leave. Mrs. Wilson smiled down at Lionel. "I hope you'll feel like this is your home while you're with us. We'll go to school tomorrow morning and meet your new teacher. In the meantime, would you like to see your new room? My son Carl, your new roommate, is probably up there now doing his homework." Lionel took a deep breath and looked down at the floor. "Yes, ma'am," he replied softly. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about foster care? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, our guests are both experts on foster parenting. Agnes Leshner has been chief of child welfare services in Montgomery County, Maryland, for more than 8 years. She oversees the operation of a variety of services, including investigations, foster care, adoptions, family preservations, and foster home recruitment. Agnes has 2 grown children who recently graduated from college. Welcome, Agnes.
Thank you.
Nancy is a birth mother, an adoptive mother, and a foster mother. She has 9 children altogether. Most of the children are grown. 2 are in college, and 1 is starting high school. Nancy worked professionally as an advocate for child welfare for 20 years. For the sake of privacy, we're not using Nancy's last name today at her request. We're so glad you could join us, Nancy.
Thank you for having me.
Agnes, why do children come into foster care?
The foster care system is set up to provide a safe environment for children who have been abused and neglected by either their parents or their caretakers.
Nancy, what's the difference between foster care and adoption?
Foster care is designed to care for children who have been abused or neglected in their homes, or their parents for some reason are unable to take care of them, while either the family situation is resolved or a permanent plan is made for the child, such as adoption, or perhaps going to live with another relative permanently. Adoption is permanent. That child is yours exactly as though you had given birth to him. You no longer answer to social workers and courts, and you're the parent.
Is there a difference financially?
I think that varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, that there is a foster care payment. We are not paid for our services. We are volunteers. We do receive money to help support the children. You can receive a subsidy for adoption of special needs or older children or minority children. In most jurisdictions, the amount varies, the age at which it ends varies. You know, it might be 18, it might be 21. But usually, if that money is necessary to make the adoption possible, it will be provided.
Agnes, did you want to comment?
Many of the children who come into foster care come from homes where there has been drug abuse by the parents, where there has been mental illness. So many of the children who come to foster care have had problems that have been neglected for a long time. And as we move children on to some sort of permanent placement, if it is not going to be returned to their home, we do want to provide the necessary financial resources to foster parents to help children improve on some of the difficulties that they have. That continues on to adoption, which is what the adoption subsidy provides, so that if children have mental health problems or educational difficulties, some of those adoption subsidy payments could be used to help children maintain a self-sufficient and successful childhood.
Agnes, do most foster children eventually get adopted?
Most foster children return to their homes, to their parents. There are many parents who, after we remove the children, recognize that they have difficulties and go into some sort of treatment, drug abuse treatment, mental health treatment. And as long as we are sure that the children can be maintained safely in their own environment, the children do return to their own homes. And if they can't, we look for some relatives. It's very important for children to maintain some family ties. We also ask foster parents to maintain a relationship with the biological parent if it is safe to do so. And a lot of foster parents are willing to not only provide a safe environment for the children, but are willing to help the parent become a better parent. They will teach them things. And so it's almost adopting a whole family and not just adopting the child.
Is there resentment by the foster parents about, you know, here's somebody who obviously can do it better than you can, and they're going to tell you how to do it?
It's always a voluntary situation where we ask the foster parent whether it's the sort of relationship that they want to get involved in with the biological parent. And it's also something that we work on with the biological parent, helping them recognize that they have problems and that there is somebody other than a governmental agent, so to speak, who can help them improve their parenting.
You have to, even if the children aren't going to go home sometimes, you have to maintain some kind of relationship with the parents, because part of your job, I think, as a foster parent, is interpreting for the children what has happened. My children have a mother who is schizophrenic, who's been ill for many, many years, who frequently doesn't take her medication, is in and out of the hospital. And I've seen my job being to help them understand this as an illness, to understand that they don't have it. They're old enough now so that it's fairly clear that they, in fact, are not going to develop the illness, we hope. And, you know, to try to have them develop some, not just understanding, but some sympathy for their parent who, in fact, could not take care of them and who did some very inappropriate things, but it was part of the illness. Mm. So, you know, even when you don't plan to send children home, you do have to maintain that that kind of understanding relationship with the birth parents. I have a friend who became a foster parent for a little boy who was one of three children. The kids were placed in three different homes because of abuse. It was not a heavy-duty drug or mental illness situation, but the mother was not coping at all. And my friend did adopt the whole family, in effect. She did everything she could to become a friend to the mother, to help her learn parenting, took her on family trips with them. She got the educational services in place that the little boy needed. The mother didn't understand his learning disabilities, and she did that work with the school. She volunteered at the school. And when the child, in fact, when all three children did return home, she remained as extended family. She would take the kids on vacations with them. The mother, who still was somewhat tenuous, often needed a babysitter, shall we say, for a weekend or a week or so, and the children just went on back to my friend's house. And she's maintained that relationship. In fact, she continued volunteering at the child's school when he returned home. She has not taken more foster children, but she has helped that family of three kids stay intact over a 10-year period.
That's quite a job. It's just amazing. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of foster parenting.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we're talking with Agnes Leshner and Nancy about foster parenting. What are the big issues for foster children? We should ask both of you because you see it from different ends.
It's very difficult for children to understand from the psychological standpoint why something happened to them, why somebody who they trusted treated them the way they did. I think it's particularly difficult for children who have been sexually abused over a long period of time to understand why a parent who is a trusted person, who's supposed to be a caretaker, would subject them or allow somebody else to subject them to sexual abuse. It's also very difficult for children to understand why they are beaten, sometimes in a way that doesn't make sense to them. For parents who have alcohol problems or problems with drug abuse, there doesn't seem to be a necessarily logical follow to a child does something bad and therefore they get beaten. They may get beaten because of something else that's going on in the parent's environment. And so most of the children do have some psychological problems trying to understand why something happened to them, why it doesn't happen to their friends, why it doesn't happen to relatives, but it happened to them. And so they start to think about, well, is it because I've been a bad kid? Is it because I have brown eyes? Is it because I walk in a certain way? And they really develop very low self-esteem, which then interferes with them developing successful social relationships, which prohibits them from going about freely in their extracurricular activities. It interferes with their school. They're always doubting, why did this happen to me? I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm ugly. And so helping children get through that is something that we ask foster parents to do, but frequently also rely on experts, social workers, psychologists in a therapeutic environment to help children understand that this most often has absolutely nothing to do with them.
That's a big job.
It really is.
I think there are a variety of kind of nitty-gritty issues that foster parents deal with in addition to the problems that all children bring into foster care. For example, all kids need a cover story when they're adjusting in a new home. They need something to tell the other kids in their new school, the kids in the neighborhood, a way to explain why they're suddenly living somewhere. And what the cover story is can vary, you know, case to case. It may just be, I'm staying with my aunt, she's my aunt. But they need to work that kind of thing through. They have to have a way to explain it, quite apart from the deep psychological understanding, just that superficial dealing with the community. I think that one of the biggest problems I've seen develop out of kids staying in foster care is this tremendous sense of uncertainty. Most of our children know that next year they're going to be here. They're going to go to this school, then they're going to go to this junior high school. This is how it's going to be. These kids don't know from day to day where they're going to be living. Are they going to go back home? Are they going to go to another foster home? There's that sense of just not knowing. And as a result, a tremendous sense of loss of control. It's very hard, I think, for kids to develop a real sense of independence and again, it's the low self-esteem, the need, the sense that they have some control over their lives. And they often can become very, very passive, which can get very frustrating to the parent, because they just don't do necessarily the things that you might expect them to do that are in their own interests. But it's this tremendous sense of a bureaucracy controlling you. We talk about dictatorial states controlling people. Well, in effect, that's what children in foster care are dealing with from their perspective. No matter how kind everyone is, no matter how well-intentioned, they are out of control.
We also have situations where we have young children who become very distrustful of this happened to them with their parents and it's probably going to happen to them with their foster parents. Mm-hmm. And so they become very aggressive. And that becomes very difficult for many foster parents to deal with. So very early on in their life, they think, oh, nobody's going to love me. My parent didn't love me. You know, the social worker, you know, didn't really care about me. So they go to a foster home, become very outwardly aggressive, fighting with the kids in the home, fighting with the rules about the foster parents, fighting in school. And the foster parents frequently will say, you know what, this is more than I can handle. So the children are then moved to another foster home. And they may repeat this cycle more than once or twice. Well, what we find is that many of these children, after a while, cannot attach to anybody. They can't attach to foster parents. They can't attach to the school or the school. They learn to not trust anybody. And as they go on in life, it becomes more and more difficult for anybody to reach them and to help them. And so they begin sort of a lifelong pattern of not trusting, of not being able to develop an intimate relationship, of not being able to follow structure, of always rebelling. And it becomes a very difficult process to reverse.
It sounds like by that kind of aggressive behavior, they're creating exactly what they believe. They're creating a difficult situation where the parents indeed are not real happy to have them around. And that's exactly what they thought before they did it.
Well, and we've encountered both sides of that. The child who became very, very aggressive. She acted out in every way that you can imagine acting out. We basically had to do 24-hour supervision with her. We also had a child who conformed much more, who went to school, who was very charming. By the time we got him, he was almost 10, and he he can't really attach. Over and over, he's failed to fully attach or trust us, even though we've hung in through everything. He has not attached to schools. As separation for college came, he pulled himself away from his school, from us, from all his old friends. You know, that becomes part of the pattern. Mm-hmm. And it's why it's so important for the people who initially get the children to hang in no matter what, that somebody has to show the children that, that there is stability and that they can trust.
What kinds of qualities, and this sounds like one, what kinds of qualities would you say are really important for foster parents to have?
I think caring, I think a lot of patience. Foster parents have a lot of intrusion in their life because in addition to having the children, they also have social workers coming and going. They have school people. They have therapists. They have attorneys for the children, for the agency. They're frequently asked to go to court. They're frequently asked to go to therapy sessions. And so it frequently requires foster parents to be very flexible, to be very patient, in addition to being caring for children who sometimes are not the most adorable, loving children at the outset.
Agnes, could you clarify for us how the system works and how adults can become foster parents?
Every local child welfare agency is always looking for new foster parents. There are always foster parents leaving the system because they've adopted, because they no longer are interested in doing this. So every local jurisdiction has a child welfare agency that investigates child abuse and neglect. And that agency also has the responsibility to find placement resources for children. By calling the local hotline, the crisis line, the reporting line, it's called different things in different jurisdictions, the child welfare agency can tell people how to apply to become foster parents.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of foster parenting.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today, we're talking with Agnes Leshner and Nancy about foster parenting.
Are there some issues that foster parents face that they wouldn't necessarily expect?
When children come into care, there's often not too much known about their needs. They come in crisis. The family may or may not have been known to the system beforehand, and basically you don't know what you're going to be dealing with. A child may present in one way and be very different. You know, we had a child who presented as very well-mannered when she was placed, very articulate, it seemed. And in fact, she was deeply troubled. And it took us, I would say, 2 years to tease out what most of the issues were before we could really start addressing them in depth. And again, you never necessarily can overcome everything that's happened to the children beforehand, but you can make a big difference. You asked earlier what characteristics foster parents need. I would say one of the most important is to be able to take the long view of what you're doing. That from day to day, it may be very difficult, and you may feel as though you're not making any progress. And you have to be able to not take personally what's happening, and you have to be able to step back and say, are these children better off now than if I had not done this? We had one child who was extremely troubled and who put us through a great deal for a very long period of time. But she has finished high school. She has not had a baby, and she's 21 years old. Her friends, because she always opted for the most troubled friends, all had babies at 14 and 15. She is working. And we don't have a close relationship with her because she couldn't attach. We're in touch, but it's not a close relationship. It isn't what we probably hoped for initially. But we have to keep saying to ourselves, look where she is. This kid would have had more children in foster care by now because she was the third generation in her family. to be in foster care. And so, you know, it's that ability to take the long view that I think is critical.
What has been your greatest challenge in being a foster parent?
That child.
That child.
No, I think the greatest challenge is, again, the child who has difficulty attaching. When you love them so much and you're killing yourself, trying to meet their needs, trying to be, you know, hang in there for them, and you know they don't necessarily really attach. I think the greatest reward we've had is our youngest child, who had a different early childhood experience. She's been in foster care since the day she was born, and her first 4 years were spent in one foster home that was stable. Her basic needs were met. She is able to attach, and she is the most wonderful child. And she will be staying with us permanently. She's 14 now. And she's the reward.
That's terrific.
How would each of you assess the positives and negatives of becoming a foster parent?
Well, from having talked to a lot of foster parents, I think that when foster parents succeed in nurturing a child who turns out well, it really is a great reward. They take great pride in having had a major say in how this child has developed. I know that we have a foster parent who took in two young boys when they were 8 and 10. Their mother was mentally ill and couldn't stay on her medication, couldn't care for these boys, and it took a long time for them to give up hope that they would go back with her. And this foster parent enabled these boys to live with her but still foster a relationship between them and their mother. And so they came to realize that their mother loved them, but she could never safely provide an environment. Both of these boys went on to college. This foster parent, who's a single mother, was able to get them scholarships in private colleges, and they have done extremely well. And when you talk to her, you know that the greatest success is that she has been able to have a major impact on these two boys turning out as well. I think the negatives are, number one, there is a lot of red tape. I think that it is, in some ways, as Nancy said, an unpredictable system. Foster parents sometimes think that these children are going to stay for a long period of time. They make a lot of emotional investment, and then all of a sudden, for one reason or another, a decision is made to try to return the children or to place the children with a relative who did not come forward for a long period of time, but now all of a sudden has presented as a possible placement resource. The unpredictableness of when the social worker is coming, when a therapeutic relationship is going to change, when visits with the parents are going to occur, all makes it, I think, a difficult situation. And I think we put a lot of burden on foster parents when we do that.
It's really important for foster parents and social workers to see themselves as a team. I think when that happens, it can be a very productive relationship. There's a lot of support that can be given in both directions. I think what becomes very difficult is when you have actors in the child welfare system, you know, as a foster parent, who don't respect you, who see you as nothing more than a roof over the child's head, and don't understand that you are the person who is with that child 24 hours a day, and that it's critical that the children have therapists and special ed teachers and social workers and attorneys, but you are the parent, the parenting parent, during that child's stay with you. And it can be very frustrating when a judge doesn't want to hear your input, and it can be rewarding when a judge does listen to your input and treats you as a professional.
We know that foster parents are needed everywhere. Agnes, could you give us a clue? How can you find out in your own community how to become and where to become a foster parent?
Each local child welfare agency is looking for foster parents. And by calling the reporting line in child welfare services, it's usually called the Child Protective Service line or the crisis line, they can give people information about how to become foster parents. In becoming foster parents, there is a period of study where the foster parents are interviewed by social workers, where there are background checks done, criminal background checks, as well as reference checks from religious institutions, from neighbors. And so when a child welfare agency approves a foster parent, there has been about a 3 to 6 month period of time where the foster parent has been studied and that the child welfare agency can know as much about that foster parent as we possibly can. We certainly don't want to place children from one unsafe environment into another unsafe environment.
In many jurisdictions, that period of the home study also includes extensive training for the foster parents. I know where I live, there's a 10-week training program in the evenings, several hours each time. And there's ongoing training because you're always encountering new situations.
I think that probably boosts the self-confidence of the person who's about to become a foster parent.
Oh, yes.
It would for me.
We also try to involve the foster parents whenever it's possible and necessary in some sort of therapeutic involvement with the child, so that if the foster parent and the child have some unresolved difficulties, we encourage the foster parent to become part of the therapeutic involvement, or if the foster parent wants a separate therapist, we do have available therapists who are trained in providing support to foster parents who may have issues that interfere with their ability to parent well.
It's a good resource for everybody. Mm-hmm. You two have been wonderful resources for our parent listeners, and all of us have learned a lot about a very important topic. Our special thanks to Agnes Leshner and to Nancy for sharing your wonderful insights into the world of foster parenting with us. Our gift for our first caller today will be an autographed copy of our new book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. We look forward to hearing from you. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. To order tapes of any show, send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentsper, that's parents, P-E-R, at AOL.com. Or again, call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address, i.am/parentsperspective. That's i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.